This is the Monday Mindset Podcast, where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 37.
And this week it's Daisy's turn to share something with us. So Daisy, what do you have today?
Well, Terry, I'm back with one of my favorite podcasts, which is Rangan Chatterjee's Feel Better, Live More. This is episode number 145. And this might make you laugh, is how to build good habits and break bad ones with James Clear.
Aha.
I know, it's one of your favorites. And it's one of those books that I keep meaning to read and haven't. I think in part because I feel maybe like I've read it already, because it's one of your favorites and you talk about it.
Also because you've read The Kaizen Way and, you know, the senses that they all kind of build from there.
Exactly. And what we were talking about at the end of that episode was how it's quite nice when you keep coming back to the same subject and listening to different people talk on it and talk about it and hearing their different take on a similar subject. And I had just been reflecting on that when up popped in my feed on Rangan's podcast, James Clear. So I thought, aha, I shall listen to that and see what he has to say on the subject. And I was also reflecting on this before we got together for recording, that because I was thinking for my drive back up through France when I go back to the UK, which is probably a good solid 8 hours, I was thinking about a book I should choose for the journey. Because I really find things like podcasts or an audio book helps pass the time a lot faster than something like music. So it's on that list for maybe it's the one I'm going to choose for that. But anyway, so I thought I will give this a listen. And glad I did. I can see why it's a book you like. I found it very, very interesting. But what I liked about this podcast and what I thought you might find interesting, because obviously you don't really need me to tell you about the book because it's one of your favorites and you know all about it. But right at the beginning of the podcast, and it's also one of those podcasts that was so rich and full of information that I feel like I could keep coming back and just taking one part out of it to talk to you about. And that particular part with this is right at the beginning, and it's a question that Rangan asked him, and he says, what didn't you include in the book that apparently has sold over 1 million copies, so very, very popular book, that you would now? So I thought, well, this would be a really good thing to talk to Terry about, because it'll be him talking about some things that he would add to the book that aren't in the book. So he said the two main things that either weren't in the original book or he didn't touch on enough were timing and social environment. He didn't talk too much about timing, but he said it was something that he didn't really mention in the book, but that it was quite important. And when is the best time to insert a new habit into your daily life and get it to stick? It seems from the way he was talking that he's talking a lot more in his book about how to get habits to stick. That seems to be his sort of general way in talking about this subject. And he said, overall, it's really whenever you have the most control over your time. So for a lot of us, that's usually the morning. We're usually more focused, less likely to be distracted by other things that tend to come into play during the day. But it really depends on the individual. And carving out a new small habit is often easiest to do before that day sets in. And alongside existing routines that generally get done at the same time every day. More often than not, I think that sort of morning routine for a lot of us is just sort of set, isn't it? That first hour or so when we get up, we tend to do exactly the same things. So maybe carving out a little bit of time to fit in a 3-minute meditation practice or something, that's probably going to be the easiest time, but not necessarily if you've got a newborn baby or something, for example. So it does depend on the individual. But the thing that he focused on a lot more was social environment. And he says that he's come to see that, and he did say that he did dedicate, I think, a chapter in his book to this, but didn't really realize just how important it was. And he says it plays a huge role in getting habits to stick. And he's come to think that maybe it really is the most important of all the things that play a part in getting these habits to stick. He starts off by using an example of saying, so you move to a new area and you see your neighbor mowing their lawn and you start doing the same thing. And that habit gets reinforced and sticks quite well. It's a habit that becomes part of your routine, partly for your own benefit, but probably more so because of the social expectations from your neighbor and probably the neighborhood. I know in the States, there are quite often quite strict rules in different neighborhoods about mm-hmm. how you're supposed to keep your lawn and things like that. I'm not so familiar with that where I live. So social expectation, he says, is true of all the tribes we're a part of. And he defines it as the social norms that influence which habits we adopt and then stick to. And he says, what you want to do is to join a tribe or a group where your desired behavior is the normal behavior for that group. Because if it's normal in that group, it's going to become very attractive and natural for you to stick to it. And he talks about our behavior as being not just a practical benefit to ourselves, but more importantly, actually, our behaviors are signals to the people around us. And by adopting the behavior and the habits of a group, we're signaling to them that we belong. And belonging, as we've discussed in previous episodes, is one of the most deep-seated needs that we have. So he says there might be habits that you love, but that don't belong in certain groups. Then there might be habits that you don't much like or you don't really want to adopt, but they're the norm in the group that you want to belong to. So by adopting them yourself, you're giving this signal out that you belong. And most people, given the choice of those two, they will opt for the latter, for the belonging. So the desire to belong often overpowers the desire to improve. So he says what's really key is to try and align the two. And Rongen mentioned the growing importance in the UK placed on what he calls social prescribing, and how it's being used more and more by medical professionals, for example, to encourage lifestyle changes. And he used an example, which he's particularly fond of, is something called Parkrun, which is an organisation in the UK. It's free to join. Most areas have a local Parkrun. You turn up and you run a 5K. But it's very welcoming. It's very encouraging and supporting. As he mentioned, they have somebody who's the person who's right at the back. So nobody ever comes last. They provide somebody who comes last. He's found it of great benefit, and he goes along apparently with his son now. So it's things like that that a really good way of getting a habit to stick. So, you know, if you wanted to get a bit more exercise, start running, that's something that he as a medical professional would encourage you to join, this social prescribing. And James goes on to talk about, think about how many habits you already have that are so ingrained you just don't think about them. You don't think about them. You simply do them because they're the generally accepted norm of a group or society as a whole. And he gives the example of knocking at a door rather than just barging in. Yeah, most people wouldn't dream of just barging into somebody's house. You'd knock first, wouldn't you? But you wouldn't necessarily think of that as a habit, but that's a habit that you formed because it's what is generally deemed the norm by society. Unless you've actually been given permission to go into somewhere without first knocking, it's just something that you would naturally do. And this got me thinking off on a bit of a tangent of maybe this is fueling a lot of the division we're seeing right now. And yes, a lot of it has something that has been festering for years and has always existed. But I was thinking, you know, how the context of COVID and increased isolation is going to drive people even more with this need to belong and maybe lead some of them to start adopting the rules and behaviours of a group more to belong than because they actually personally uphold them. And I was thinking how easy or easier it could be to get sucked into that, you know, that warmth and comfort of belonging and actually maybe starting to let go of some of your own principles. And that got me thinking also again, and something that he goes on to talk about in a lot more detail later on. And it also made me think of Gretchen Rubin. How many times I bring up Gretchen Rubin on this podcast, but how it ties in with the importance of identity. And he goes on to talk about later about how important it is to figure out first, you know, who you are, what's important to you, what A is your identity, what are your principles, what you want to be part of your identity, and then align your choice of community with that. Because if you're wanting to get these new habits to stick, it's going to be a lot easier if the two are in keeping with each other. So he says, if you want a habit to stick long term, then having a community around you where that habit is the norm is absolutely key. And the image that came to me was that it's easy enough to swim against the tide briefly, but nigh on impossible to keep it up for long. So if you've got people all going the same way, it's going to be much, much easier. But Rongan asked him, well, what about people who've tried to implement new healthy eating habits, for example, but their friend group does something different or even maybe mocks their choices? What does he suggest then? And James talks about creating what he calls a sacred space for the habit you're trying to make stick. So he uses yoga as an example. Previously, before COVID, that might have been going to a yoga class where you've got that sacred space and you've got that community and everyone's practicing yoga. But now, you know, maybe an area of your home or garden or an outdoor space somewhere where you know you can dedicate the time uninterrupted and safe for your new habit. But he says the more precise you are about your desired habit that you want to get to stick, the more difficult it can be to find a space that exists already or a community or a group that exists already. So he said, you know, don't be afraid to create your own. If one doesn't exist already, create one. And that made me think of when I created my Facebook group. And that was exactly what happened to me. You know, the group that we were both a part of, the Two Keto Dudes Facebook group, when that closed down. And that was a community that I'd liked being a part of, but that also I was aware of some issues with that. So when I knew that I wanted to carry on with having a community like that, because I realized how important it was to my own journey, but also for helping other people, I thought about what he talks about, that alignment, you know, what I needed, what helped me, what wasn't helping me, and realized that, you know, having a women-only space was the key element of that. And so I created my own. So, you know, there's always that option open to you. If it isn't there already, it's so easy these days to create your own, especially online. And that can be big groups, you know, how big Facebook groups can be, or it can be, you know, a really small and personal group. You know, I thought also of the little family group, and I know a lot of people have on something like WhatsApp. And that personally for me has, I've often felt a bit of an outsider in my immediate UK family group. For one, because I live in France, but for two, for other reasons, whatever. But we have a little WhatsApp group where we just share things. And that, you know, I've come to realize has just made me feel much more included in that very small group. You know, we were only talking about a handful of people. So big or small, create your own if it doesn't exist already. So this is really only a small section of the podcast. And he goes on to talk about all sorts of interesting things. But one little tip that he gives for getting habits to stick, or actually to make habits unstick that you want to get rid of. He talks about friction and the path of least resistance, because he says that's always going to be the path we take. So the idea is to add friction to habits that you want to get rid of and remove friction for new habits that you want to create, get to stick. And he says, prime your environment accordingly. He says, think of how most living rooms are set up to watch the TV. They're primed for that habit. Say if you wanted to be watching less TV, he says, just create a bit of friction. Maybe put the television in a cupboard that you've got to open. Put the remote control in a drawer. Perhaps you're wanting to read more books. So put the remote control in a drawer and put a book where the remote control used to be. You know, turn your favorite chair away from the TV, little things like that. He said probably no one thing that you do that creates friction is going to have a massive effect. He said, but if you put lots of them in, it can actually help quite a lot. And Rongan said, when they were talking about TV, that he's taken to unplugging his TV and the cable box. And apparently it can take up to about 5 minutes to load up Netflix and what have you. And he says often that's enough for him to just think, oh, you know, actually, I can't really be bothered. I'm going to read my book or do something else. And James talked about his mobile phone and how if he's got his mobile phone next to him when he's working or something, he will check it about every 3 minutes. He said, but all he needs to do is to put it in a different room when he doesn't want to be checking it every 3 minutes, and that will be enough to stop him. He says it would take him hardly any time to get up and go to check it, like 30 seconds or something. He said, but that's enough. So his point was, doesn't actually often need to be that much friction to stop you doing something. You know, a lot of us are sort of inherently lazy, I guess you could call it, or just we just like the path of least resistance. So that option of, well, if I want to check my phone, I'm going to have to walk to the other room to do it, probably going to do it less often. So just putting this friction in the way. And Rongan makes a point, which is what I'm going to finish up on. He says, just try to control the things you can control and worry a bit less about the things you can't. So add friction for things that you want to change, for habits that you want to give up, and try and remove friction for new habits that you want to create or to make stick. So hopefully that's given you a little bit extra from James Clear that you didn't know about already.
I really like the idea about the social environment, and I guess I hadn't thought about it maybe as specifically as habits, but I remember years ago, I used to listen to this one person's podcast, and I can't even now remember his name, but his story was that in his late teens and early 20s, he, you know, was doing a lot of drugs, partying a lot, really just not getting far, couldn't make it in school, wasn't keeping a job, and I don't remember exactly why, but he joined a CrossFit gym. Hmm. And all of that other behavior dropped away because the people in his CrossFit gym weren't doing those behaviors. They were working out at 6:30 in the morning. And so they weren't staying out until 2:30 or 3 in the night doing drugs and drinking and things. And so that whole idea that many of us hear about of so much of our behavior is influenced by like the 5 or 10 people that we spend our most contact with. Mm. So that idea that creating that if it doesn't already exist. And I think we've seen kind of an explosion of that with social media, but meetup groups, all kinds of different ways to create community where it didn't already exist. And I'm also thinking about part of my work. Actually, all of my work is with a community of people who are sharing a similar journey in either weight loss or reaching health goals or both. And so much of the benefit of it is the community feel, to get to meet with other people and talk with them about it. And as you said, kind of, I don't remember the word to use, but the social influence of, I want those habits. I want to fit in this group. I want to fit in with what they're talking about. And that can help us establish our own habits. And then the other piece that I really liked about this is that part that you just talked about with the removing friction or adding friction. And I had to laugh partly while you were talking. I have a kind of a strange setup in where I live now. I live in a studio. And so between where my bed is and my couch, there's only maybe 10 feet difference, but there's a dresser in between that's a little bit taller than the bed. And that's where I have my TV. So it's almost like I need my TV on a lazy Susan and just turn it to face the living room or turn it to face the bedroom. But right now, in order to switch it is really annoying to me. I don't have cords that reach very far. And so I have to pick it up. I have to unplug it. I have to do this. I have to turn it. And so it does help prevent me from either watching TV in bed or watching TV before bed or whatever. And then the other one that I did just recently with that is I couldn't find the remote. And because of how I don't have regular TV, I only use streaming services. Those couldn't be done just with the buttons on the back of my TV.
Right.
So without the remote, I really couldn't watch it. So it was great for several days this week. I had no TV on and it just reminded me of how much time that I can put toward that unnecessarily. So that idea of friction and then the reverse, of course, removing little pieces of friction for those habits that you want to create, making a habit easier for yourself. I think that's a brilliant way to think about it. And although I love hearing your take on this episode, of course, I'm fascinated and want to listen to James Clear. So I'm sure I will be listening to this, but I'm so glad you shared that. And as you said, I talk about James Clear and Atomic Habits maybe as much as you talk about Gretchen Rubin. But yeah, this is exciting to me.
Yeah, and I'm really listening to him speak and the different take on things. And he was talking about later on when he talked about this attaching identity to changing habits. I've sort of thought about it with Gretchen Rubin's work. That's sort of how I came to the linking the two. But he was saying later on, because, you know, I loved his honesty. He was saying, look, you know, the stuff I write about, this is all stuff that other people have thought of before. And I just come at it from a slightly different way, or I'm repeating it or whatever. He said, but the one thing that I think is my idea, that I'm sort of the first one who linked the two, is this thing about identity and habits. So I find that interesting. And it was, well, just one of the things, actually, just listening to him talk and finding him very interesting made me definitely want to listen to the whole book. But that one in particular, because that one has resonated a lot with me, as you know. So, yes, yeah, so I definitely want to find out more for him. But I really like this concept of the sacred space thing as well, because I think it's all very easy, isn't it, to say, well, you know, find your community and get habits to stick that way. And yes, it absolutely works, and it, you know, in principle and reality, but sometimes, as Rongen brought up that point of, well, what happens if that goes against our existing family groups or friend groups? And that's where it becomes a lot more difficult, I think. And so carving out these, even if they are just very small sacred spaces, small in terms of group size or small in terms of the time you can dedicate to them, you know, maybe you can just start eking out a little bit more time, just having that place you can go to, whatever it is, you know, like the Facebook group or something, even if it's just somewhere that you can check into for a few minutes a day with like-minded people. It does make a big difference. But it doesn't have to be something that is a huge part of your life to affect change, I guess, is my point. You've just got to have that sacred space somewhere that's safe and is yours that you can go to.
Well, I think creating sacred space really emphasizes this is important to me. I am going to set aside this time and space in my life for it. So that is important to building habits. The other piece that you just mentioned a little bit ago is the idea of identity. And you probably noticed this theme in me. I love when I hear an author say something that I have believed or talk about with people. And I always feel a little bit like, wait a minute, I had that idea. Difference is I never wrote a book about it. But I often talk about the idea. So let's say, for example, you and I both eat low carb. For me, in order to make that change really stick, it has to become part of your identity. Mm. And you often hear people say, you know, sometimes I eat low carb or ketogenically or whatever word they use, but then other times I don't. And I think both you and I talk about is I eat ketogenically or I eat low carb. Every once in a while I don't, but it's that idea that it's an identity. So when I go to a restaurant, I know what I'm looking for on that menu. I'm only looking for food that fits my identity. Mm. And so I think identity is a huge part of behavior change. Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And when you get to that point, I think with all sorts of things, but like you say, something like, because it's so part of our environment, the way we eat. And it was Kate Notto that referred, I think she referred to it as home base. When she got to the point where keto for her was her home base, and that's always where she came back to. That was her norm. That's where she lives. That's just part and parcel. That is her. And as you just said, sometimes you might eat a different way for whatever reason, but that's always what you come back to. That's part of your identity, however you want to describe it. And I think that is always the turning point with a new habit that you're trying to get to stick, mm-hmm. is when it does become part of you, part of your identity.
Because otherwise, it means constant decision-making about it. Mm. And all of the challenges that he talked about in the book become, well, why wouldn't I just eat this instead? I like how this tastes, or, ooh, that sounds really good, or this is convenient. But if it's part of your identity, those don't feel like options. Mm. And you don't have to be grappling with that decision all of the time.
That's right. And so it might just be that you have to get to that place a little bit more slowly by carving out these sacred spaces, mm-hmm. and creating friction.
I'm going to work on creating some more friction this week. Koa, you're going to have to steal that remote.
Where did you find it? Where was the remote, the missing remote?
It was lodged between the couch and the couch cushion.
I've actually found my remote before when it was missing in the dog bed. Ah. Not chewed beyond usefulness, but slightly chewed.
That's awesome.
Okay, well, I hope you have a wonderful friction or frictionless, depending whether you're trying to get rid of or create new habits week. And everyone at home too.
Thanks, Daisy. Take good care, everybody. Bye-bye.